You knobhead.
On that note, that's definitely staying in, Jack Mitchell. We will begin. Fuck you. So, this is the beginning of a yet-to-be-named series. We're trying to figure it out. We need more coffee and more rum to think of a suitably witty name, I think. Will you agree with that?
I would agree, for sure.
Yeah.
My mind's a blank.
as usual. and today we are actually, despite Jack's best efforts, we are going to talk about GIs, or geographical indications. And these are kind of very important in rum. And first of all, we'd just like to say we're going to talk a little bit about something quite controversial that a lot of rum people try and avoid, avoid the topic at the moment. I think it's very we're all in this rum family kind of together, you know, and no one wants to piss anyone off or upset anyone.
I think plenty of people are happy to talk about it, but I think for the most part, people really sit firmly in one of two camps. So there are quite opposing viewpoints on it. It's kind of not really our intention with this video to pick a side, if you will, or really big up one aspect and not consider the other. We basically just want to discuss the idea as a concept for people that might be a bit more new to the category, so they understand some of the things that are going on in rum right now and things that are changing, and also some pre-existing rules and regulations as well. It's one of those kind of things that's sometimes said about rum, that there's not really any rules or regulations for rum. It can be made anywhere in the world and there's not really any restrictions. When you actually delve into it, that's really not very true. There's a lot of quirks out there that are, and some that are really interesting and some that we're still discovering now. It's not always the most exciting thing to looking up like laws and things like that, when you would rather just look up tasting notes and new products that are on the market and stuff like that. But I think certainly in order to preserve the integrity of the category and to also sort of protect consumers as well as producers and distillers, topics like GIs are really important to consider.
Yeah, I think fundamentally, I think they are really good for, like you said, like this kind of attitude that some kind of people have. And like, I've seen it written by like some people that are actually really popular, just general kind of like spirit kind of people and kind of people that are really within like the sort of industry and things like that. And they're like saying like stuff like rum has no rules and all this. And it's like, that is not the way at all. Like these things are there for a reason, and I think they're really important. So first things first, we should probably start off as what a geographical indication is. Like I said, we're gonna shorten it to GI for all of this, because I don't know, we don't have the breath to keep saying that. It's too wordy for us. Stick to GI. But essentially, they are designed so a product from a specific location or country that is known for its either quality or its specific method of being made in that particular place can kind of basically essentially get a GI, and it's a way of protecting that way of making something, and it kind of stops, essentially the idea is to stop people from marketing things as a specific thing from a specific place. A prime example is like champagne has like a GI, or in France it's known as like an AOC, which is Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée in my French accent, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, probably with Martinique, which is very famous for its AOC when it comes to making rum. But people essentially expect a certain quality when it comes to champagne. And it's grown in a very specific region, and it's grown in a very specific way. So, and made, sorry, in a very specific way. And, you know, other people can make stuff that way. Like, prime example is Prosecco. Kind of does it slightly differently in terms of, I won't get too much into it, but that's also got its a DOC, which is the Italian version, which again, I won't bore in it. I can't say the Italian bit, so I won't, I won't attempt to. But essentially, it's designed to protect certain very sort of niche products that are made in a specific area. With the Caribbean and with rum, you know, these countries are so small, some of them, that it is countrywide, like, these apply to, which is fine. But, like, a lot of the times it will be a very specific product from a very specific place. And the reason why it's got one of these GIs and it's protected is because the quality can be assured from it. And there's people that have worked in a very, like, traditional way for a very long time to kind of build up these really good products and really quality things. And essentially, we don't want to make those people look bad by giving poor imitations away of their product. You know, that's kind of the fundamentals of these things. It's like, it's a worldwide ensuring quality the best we can in certain products. And that covers, you know, everything from Melton Roebury pork pies to Cuban rum.
It's quite a spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was exactly the point I was just going to make. Hopefully, for anyone that's watching the videos leading into this one that we've produced, I'm sure anyone that's talking about rum, they'll allude to the fact that because it's made in so many different places all around the world, there are so many different takes on it, if you will. Like, it's steeped in history no matter what country, the rum is being produced in. So there are so many historical methods of production and traditional methods and styles and ways of doing things. And as Andy was saying, yeah, it's all in the same vein to kind of, like, protect and preserve these methods, and as a result, kind of, like, retain quality. There's a reason why there are certain methods and styles that have, of course, somewhat evolved over the last few hundred years or whatever as technology has advanced and whatever, but for the most part, stylistically, they're similar in a lot of respects. And there's a reason why they've sort of stood the test of time. It's because of all the tradition and the prior knowledge that's kind of got us to this point. And if it keeps getting diluted, and now given that travel and communication is so free all around the world, it'd be very easy for producers to start selling to other suppliers who then tamper with it a lot. And it can get very, very fuzzy as to what is legit and what's not. And for the most part, yeah, having GIs in place really just makes it very, very clear cut for everyone involved, from the, you know, master distillers that are all around the world, you know, formulating the stuff, right to, you know, whoever's consuming it, you know, is buying it from the local supermarket or wholesaler or retailer online, whatever.
Yeah. So it's like, they're pretty big things, you know, they're usually enforced by the sort of part of the government, or like the World Trade Organization, like people like that. It's like really, really important. So it usually goes around. What are you going to say, Jack?
No, not at all. It's just, yeah, I guess it's another important point really, isn't it? When we're thinking about this stuff, it's not like it's something that's agreed and discussed just within the kind of spirits world. Like, it's actually people, yeah. Like, yeah, it's people out there with actual serious job titles and like, yeah, people that are in charge of legislation and laws, yeah, and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's another point. Like, we're going to try and make this slightly probably more interesting than reading through a lot of GI's like kind of articles and stuff. There's a lot of them, and they're very long-winded, and we're going to try and kind of shorten that down a little bit. I know. Basically, the main thing that these GIs do is to do with like naming a product. So, for example, like I said, like champagne, to be called champagne, it has to be a specific, if you put champagne on your label, it has to be made in a specific way in a specific area. That's kind of the fundamental thing. So, for example, like Jamaica rum, if you want to write Jamaican rum on a label, it has to be made in a specific place in Jamaica, actually. It turns out it works out about half the country, admittedly, through area. Yeah, it's about 50%, which is madness. But it still has to be made in a specific place in Jamaica, you know, and it still has to follow all these guidelines. And they go super, super in depth. Like we're talking, like I said, the area is like an important one. You know, you've got your raw materials. So the Martinique AOC even stipulates like the time you have to harvest your sugarcane. So obviously they make agricole, so it's from sugarcane juice. And they have like a specific window to harvest that sugarcane and turn it into the juice they make the rum with. You know, you have the fermentation process. Sometimes it has to use specific yeast. You know, like the Jamaica one has to, it can be commercialized sort of yeast or it can be wild yeast. The distillation, so the type of still you use, etc. So certainly the Martinique AOC, you have to use like a Creole column and you can only distill to a certain ABV. Bear in mind, like in Martinique, they do actually make some, Tierra Vieiras, for example, makes some non-AOC rum. And that, again, has to be completely separate, a completely separate process from the AOC rum that kind of abides by all these rules. So nothing gets mixed up accidentally or anything like that. You've got your aging. So, you know, it might be as small as something like the barrel size or, like I said, I was talking to Jack about before, actually, like in Cuba, the Cuban GI for making rum is if it drops below 15 degrees during aging, it doesn't count towards the aging process because it's too cold. And obviously, like the effect on the barrel is going to be a lot less. And then even like your sort of volatile components, so your congeners and stuff like that we spoke about on our rum dementals. Was it rum dementals? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So your total congeners per liter can be affected by this, and it's like you can have like a maximum and also a minimum. There are so many things like that. Unless you were a distiller or something like super in like the rum industry or whatever, or worked at a distillery, you would be like, why is that there? Like it's insane. But like they go into so much detail. And that's so important because they want something to be true to what it is, like the product to be true to what it is, which is really good. Yeah. I'll stop ranting.
Yeah, no. It's all very interesting stuff, really. And it is those little tweaks and those little differences, again, hopefully, that we've conveyed in some past videos. It's these little differences that can have a huge impact on the final product stylistically, you know. Of course, as well as just the flavor profiles and the quote unquote, you know, quality of a product, behind the scenes of everything, of course, is the kind of economic impact of all this stuff. So when you consider, say, someone's making a rum in bulk in one country and it gets like shipped out of the country at a fairly young age, it then gets aged, tweaked, bottled, and sold elsewhere. A lot of the money that is kind of getting generated from that product that started its journey initially in one place, that money's not really going back into that area. It can actually be going into something completely different. So part of this whole process as well, you know, of, for example, requiring rum to be aged for a certain amount of time in one specific area, or even, you know, going right through to bottling in one specific region or country or whatever, kind of helps retain some of the economic value that it will bring. Does that make sense?
Yeah, as well as like the certainly the you know, the economic value in terms of like that, those producers are paying that tax on it and stuff like that. And you know, it's also good for, like you said, it goes fundamentally like even down to like water. You know, you have to use water from that specific place. I think it's Jamaica's that has like that in there, and I think Barbados, that we're probably going to talk about in a minute, certainly has. I'm pretty sure that's one of their stipulations for their GI, is that it has to be reduced ABV wise with water from that place. Which is, again, it's very important. You know, if you're bottling something at 40%, most of that liquid is actually still water. So it's going to make an impact on the flavour and the even like the mouthfeel and, you know, all sorts to do with the rum. It's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, again, touching on some of the economic points as well, given that there is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of distillers that are selling some bulk batches to other companies and then doing, you know, working on some smaller projects and things like that. Money can get dispersed in a lot of different ways. And I think with GIs in place, it closes a few doors on certain companies with a lot more money behind them to kind of monopolize, if you will. So kind of the point I was making before, you know, making sure that the money is kind of somewhat getting funneled back to where it should be. You know, these days, a lot of it really is based on trust. So certainly the when there's rum getting sent from countries where there's not currently a GI in place, they're really having to pick and choose as to who they're sending some of their rum off to, because there's no guaranteeing how it's going to be used in a final product, you know.
So with this, you're talking about like distillers to like essentially like third party bottlers or whatever. So
yes,
we're talking about like people like buying, you know, barrels and barrels of rum and then bottling them under a certain name.
Yeah, so precisely. Like, you know, yeah. So right now it's like purely a trust exercise for places that don't have GIs in place. They have to make sure that they are sending their product to people with really high integrity that are going to basically just purely due to request, not tweak it too much, you know, or not tweak it in a way that would make it somewhat unrecognizable to, you know, the initial product.
Well, you could even argue the other way around, you know, these people that are buying this rum that's a lot of money, you know, for a barrel. Unless you have the right sort of documentation, who's to say it's such and such years old, or who's to say, you know, nothing's happened to it, or it's from this still or from that still, you know, it's kind of a, it's kind of a bit of a both way thing, I suppose.
But yeah. I guess one could argue if people are spending X amount of money on this stuff, once they purchase it, surely then it's theirs, right? Like technically is that not the way it should be? But then on the flip side, as I was saying before, there are certain brands out there that might have the money power behind them that there wouldn't really be any stopping them in just basically hoovering up a variety of products and doing what they want with it, monopolizing it. And you could see why more smaller scale distilleries would be somewhat like ensnared by that, because bottom line, if they're getting offered a large amount of money, it's quite a nice, easy cash injection,
certainly, yeah.
Rather than sort of sticking to your guns and, you know, not having it meddled with and bought en masse. There's a concept, I've heard it in a few interviews and things like that. I know, I'm pretty sure it's something I've heard Richard Seal of Foursquare in Barbados talk about before. This kind of like idea of intellectual property, you know, and it kind of goes back to what we discussed at the start with the historical components and the traditional components, you know, like a lot of the kind of selling power behind a Jamaican rum or a Bayesian rum or a rum from Guyana, they sell so well because it's kind of like, there's almost like a quality and a stylistic sort of guarantee that comes with that name because of the amount of time and energy that's been put into cultivating that that reputation. If all of a sudden anyone from anywhere can start buying this stuff up, tweaking it however they want, adding all this extra stuff to a point where it's unrecognizable, but then still slapping a label on it, it starts to really fuzzy up what a Barbados rum is like, or what it can kind of like.
I think the worry is long term, it's kind of detrimental, because certainly with places at the moment where there is these GIs, it's a case of, well, you kind of expect a certain quality and certain stylistic taste almost from these, like, kind of few rooms that have like GIs and things. And if, you know, you turn around and you don't get that, you're a bit like, what's going on here? Like, something must have happened to this. Like, this can't be quite right. Like, you were, that's the one of the purposes of these GIs is to, you know, you expect that certain amount of quality through a room, really, that from a certain place, that you know, without them, you probably wouldn't necessarily get, because there would be people jumping on the back of these kind of producers that are doing it actually properly and right, and you know, which is the vast majority, and you know, they'd be kind of piggybacking on their success almost and their kind of popularity. But then if you paid a certain amount of money, you know, a decent amount of money for a bottle of rum from, say, Jamaica, and it wasn't anything what you expected to be, it was, you know, it had some sugar in it and stuff like that, you'd be like, what a waste of time. Like, I'm probably not going to do that again, because I'm probably not going to buy another Jamaican rum again, because I might end up in the same situation where I've been kind of almost screwed over.
So to kind of like quash some of the misconceptions then about rum not really having any or many rules or regulations, do you want to give us like a little bit of a rundown maybe of some of the places that currently have GIs in place?
So at the moment, as far as I'm aware, you've got Jamaica, Brazil, Cuba, sorry, I'm just checking my notes here, Dominican Republic, Guyana, Guatemala, and Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
And go on.
No, I was just going to say, so, and obviously those GIs, they're not all identical. Each one has its very own set specific, you know, things that need to be followed in order to be classified in such a way.
Yeah, so they'll all be different from each country, you know, there will be different kind of traditional ways of making rum there that for the most part they're probably going to stick to, you know, which is not a bad thing, you know, it's protecting, like we've said, like it's protecting their kind of their industry and their sort of spirit. Mm-hmm. And that sort of almost quality or kind of certain characteristics you would expect from that country. There's also, you know, a certain like, certainly I think Martinique and Jamaica take it like a step far, where they'll have, so you can basically create a room there that covers all of the GI or AOC regulations or whatever and conforms to all of it. But it still has to pass like a panel of, I think, as far as I'm aware, they're like other master distillers on the work there or whatever in that country. And it has to pass through them, like doing like a blind tasting on it to agree whether it kind of fits in with the characteristics of that country, which is pretty cool, I think.
Do they? I mean, that sounds very cool, but obviously, it's, I presume these people are very fine tuned to be able to spot subtle differences. But it doesn't seem like the most scientific approach. Do they do anything else? Do they test? In some
as far
ways.
As I'm like, yeah, there's some like gas spectrometry. I can never say that word. Spectrometry. There we go.
Right.
And there's like chemical tests as well that kind of will.
That makes sense.
I think it's mostly for the volatile sort of compounds in it, like these conjugates and stuff like that, and to make sure they're below a certain level.
Right.
As well. And then. Obviously, like, I think one of the biggest sort of, I was just, like, almost like dramas, actually for a very like
hot topic.
for a very few years in the rum world, if anyone's listening to this and they aren't aware, is this Barbados GI that they're basically working on at the moment. So the last news any of us really heard about it, I think, was about the 20th of January. And it was like a press release. And it wasn't the best news, I don't think, for everyone. But basically, they're trying to push through this Barbados GI at the moment. Essentially, which means all the distilleries on the island basically have to agree to it. Otherwise, it's pointless, you know. And there is a certain... You know, there's some disagreement, basically, and this is what's kind of caused this... I wouldn't say uproar. It's probably not quite that bad. Like, everyone in rum's quite chilled, but it certainly, it's just a lot of people's interest.
Yeah, it's sort of like brought the topic back to the forefront, hasn't it, really? Because it brings up this discussion as to whether, you know, people, yeah, for one, agree to it. They want to preserve the tradition and everything that we've just discussed up to this point. Or on the flip side, there are certain people that are concerned that it might cause the category as a whole to somewhat stagnate if there's not opportunities there to kind of play around with the rum a little bit more, if it has to follow set, you know, some would argue like rigid structures, it might take some of the fun and some of the experimentation out of there. Now again, people come back with the fact that it's not necessarily going to stop that, because people that are advocating for GIs aren't saying that other rum can't be made in, for example, Barbados, and not used in alternative ways. The argument is purely that it should be more transparent when it comes to how this is conveyed to a consumer. So, kind of like what Andy was saying before, Martinique's a good example. There's certain things that are made under the AOC. There are also rums that are made not abiding by those rules, and there's no problem with that. They just defined in different ways. That's all it is. So, can we say the brand that I presume is quite well known anyway?
I'll speak about it. It's fine. I don't give a fuck.
nice. Okay. Well, so basically, all it seems like for the most part, and again, it's not like we have super inside knowledge into any of this. We basically just read and keep up with what everyone else does. But our take on it is that basically all the distilleries in Barbados, barring one, which is it's not Plantation, is it? But it's
West Indies Rum Distillery, which is owned by Maison Ferrand, which owns Plantation.
Yeah. So Maison Ferrand, based in France, obviously started off as a cognac house, and then over time started delving more into rum. And I mean, they've really shot to prominence in the last few years in the rum world, for one, because they have a lot of really, really fantastic products. I think the rate in which they've been firing out new stuff has been amazing, really. I mean, they've got some
super accessible as well, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they've got some, you know, from a bartender's perspective, they've got some stuff in their core range. The likes of Plantation 3-Star is great in cocktails. They've got a pineapple variant that's really good. Then if you want to start delving more into some of the more high-end kind of sipping variants.
OFTD, come on.
Well, of course. I mean, how could I forget?
I can't go without a mention.
Power. Yeah, I mean, they've got so many products out there. And one of the things they really pride themselves on is the fact that they are kind of messing around with blends and things like that from all around the world. They are really, you know, almost ahead of the curve when it comes to experimenting with different cask finishes, aging in different climates, all this kind of stuff. And I guess one of their biggest fears is that something like one of these GIs being in place would really impede on their ability to be so flexible when it comes to, you know, developing and devising new products.
So the other distilleries like involved in this, for one, are like some of you all know that watch this, I imagine, are Mount Gay, Foursquare, and St. Nicholas Abbey. And we are not affiliated with any of these people in any way whatsoever. Like, we've never really met anyone from those distilleries, like, or anything like that. So
just drank plenty of the products.
Yeah.
Along with Plantation, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, so we're kind of doing this from a completely impartial point of view.
Standpoint. Really.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. So obviously, it's a bit like nobody wants to talk about it in the rum world, really. Everyone is like very much like fence sitting because, and that's no bad thing. That's because everyone, like we spoke about on a previous, I think we spoke about it with actually Dave when we did his in-depth with. Everyone in the rum industry wants everyone to do well. Like, no one's here to slag anyone off, you know. But I think this, essentially, Plantation, or sorry, Maison Ferrand, or West Indies Rum Distillery's argument is they apparently have some evidence that suggests that in Barbados, they've been adding sugar to rum for forever. Like, the apparently they have some, like, letters or newspaper clippings or something, some sort of documentation to suggest that they've been adding rum, sugar into rum for a long time, which means it should change the GI because it's obviously a historical thing as well, you know. But I don't think any of the other distilleries will agree with that. Is a problem, you know. Certainly the three main ones, and, you know, Foursquare, Mount Gay, St. Nicholas Abbey own 90% of the aged rum stock on the island, to put that into a bit of perspective.
Yeah.
So,
and again, I think that kind of like almost kind of loops back around quite nicely to the economic side of things. Of course, yeah, all those distilleries are, you know, operating out the island primarily, so a lot of the money that is being generated from the products they're producing goes back into that area. Of course, Plantation, it's, you know, all it's around the world,
France, isn't it, you know?
Well, yeah, it's getting aged, you know, they're doing partial aging in the Caribbean, then partial aging in France, then
so, well, that's a prime example of what you were just saying. Is, I think I've seen a quote from someone from somewhere, it might be a man from St. Nick's Abbey, sorry, whoever you are, I've forgotten your name, but he basically said, you know, if we take some age rum, well, the longer rum ages, the more money it makes, right? You know, the mm-hmm. more expensive it gets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if you take that out of the country and start aging it somewhere else, you're just losing money. And for probably less quality products, you know, if you're aging something, say the way Plantation do it, and they'll go and age something in France, don't get wrong, like you said, delicious products, but from the Barbados kind of point of view, that kind of, that barrel of rum has left the country at, say, a certain price, you know, it's only gone and got more value over in France. And they get sold again, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, just to point out again, all this isn't to say that, say, a rum was aged in Barbados 4 years, and then something like a GI wouldn't stop it then potentially getting taken out of the country and, you know, changed elsewhere, you know, aged that for another 4 or 5 mm-hmm. years elsewhere. I think the only point is that as soon as it got tweaked in that way, it wouldn't then be able to be classified as a Bayesian rum.
That's the idea. That's, yeah,
yeah. And some of the pushback, of course, is that to name something a partially aged Barbados rum or a Barbados rum with added sugar, it starts to not seem quite as appealing for a consumer. And that's where the pushback comes from, with people that really aren't in favour of these GIs.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. So essentially, in this whole thing, this West Indies rum distillery kind of want them to these rules to be a bit more relaxed, which they claim is more historical to do with Barbados. Like they've said, you know, people in Barbados have been making rum for a certain amount of time, like a long time, using this kind of method of adding a little bit of sugar and stuff as well, as well as kind of the way Mount Gay and Foursquare and St. Nicholas Abbey do it, which is where we get to the sticking point. You know, I'm pretty sure it's all about sugar, and I think someone maybe like Richard Seale wouldn't necessarily settle for a compromise on this either. I think he's very adamant that it should be done without any sugar. You know, all aged on the island probably if he had it his way. I imagine. I mean, I'm not putting words into his mouth, but I don't think if they don't come to a GI agreement, it'll be a real shame for the I think it would be more detrimental than if they come to a compromise agreement in Barbados, I think.
Mm.
I think. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess if you can have at least some say on rules and regulations rather than just being a complete Wild West. Yeah, like you say, I'm sure you'd rather come to a bit of a 50-50 split as to there just being no rules and regulations. I mean, put it this way, currently as it stands, there's no rules and regulations really in place for it, is there, in terms of, you know, what can make it classified as a Bayesian rum. So for those that are unhappy with the state of things currently, I guess any step in the right direction would be a good thing. But as you say, for good reason as well, they want, for the most part, a really airtight GI bill in place. I don't know how it could get pushed through. I presume anything that involves politics and substantial amounts of money will require a lot of jumping through hoops and meetings and revisions of law and all that kind of thing. But as the category kind of continues to grow in popularity, if you will, I'm sure that it will keep shining a spotlight on this issue more and more. Certainly in the rum world, I'm sure economically it's still only a tiny little blip, but Foursquare's picking up a lot of traction. Obviously Mount Gay's always been there doing its thing, and it's going to continue to grow in popularity. And
Nicholas Abbey is delicious as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's countless examples, really, of rum coming from that part of the world. And again, same with Plantation. I'm sure that their numbers are skyrocketed in recent years, and when it comes to economic impacts on Barbados, you know, I'm sure the likes of government or whatever will keep looking into this quite seriously if it factors in any way, you know, kind of substantial amounts of money coming into the country or being lost elsewhere. Again, I think it's something that Richard Seale might have touched on in the past, but I think when it comes to drinking rum in Barbados, it's still not really seen as one of the more premium drinking options, you know. I think the likes of whiskey and bourbon out there are held in quite high regard, and it's quite shocking from an outsider's perspective.
Like, how much stuff that is.
Yeah, there's so much good quality stuff being made there, and yet it's still kind of deemed as being a bit of a more unrefined option.
To be fair, you could argue that with us, though. Like, me and you are not huge, like, Scotch drinkers. But it's, you know, 5 hours up the road. Driving.
Yeah, no,
it's like an hour flight.
No, I know. But I don't think that it's necessarily, like, it doesn't come with a kind of weight of status on it, you know? Like, if you like drinking Scotch, someone's not going to look at you and think, like, oh, you know, like that's not a to do thing,
yeah,
to drink. So again, I mean, I don't know what I've never been to Barbados, unfortunately, so I don't really know what socially or kind of culturally what it's like. So I don't know how much of sway rum has on all of that. And as a result, I don't know
how much. I imagine there's plenty of people that drink rum in Barbados.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure there is. But when it comes to the kind of people that are in a position of power to really look at this stuff seriously and, you know, maybe push it through more or lean more on it in a certain regard to ensure that something gets sorted. If it's a product that's not, or it's a category that's not deemed quite as serious or high status, it's going to leave it in this kind of like limbo stage a lot longer. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think they will come to an agreement, and I think that would be a huge shame. I don't think either side is really willing to compromise on it. So,
what do you think? They would come to a point where there'd just be a stalemate with it, though. Surely, as long as there's operators out there, there'd always be a little bit of push and shove, people trying to make headway with it.
No, I just don't think the GI will happen in Barbados. I can't see it. Certainly in the next few years, I can't see it happen. Next 5 years, I can't see it happen. I don't think there is either side of it, and whatever they think, I don't think they will deviate from that. I don't think there is any wiggle room on either side where there can be like some sort of Venn diagram joined in the middle type thing. I don't think either side has that much wiggle room to allow it. Like, I really don't. Like, I don't think it's going to happen, which is such a shame. But...
Well, that's very cheery of you, mate.
Woo!
I mean, but I guess the only...
The kind of advantage we have is we know Barbados rum and the good stuff, the difference between the good stuff and the bad stuff, isn't it? And, or we'll find out before we buy a bottle or something, you know. Which not everyone will necessarily do.
I mean, I guess the thing for us to do would be to invite someone on that is more heavily involved and knows some of the inside scoop.
It's one of those things where I, at the moment, I feel like nobody wants to kind of touch it almost. Maybe we've done the bad thing.
No, I mean, I think
the
it is
bad
nice.
The boys of the rum industry, I'm telling you.
I think it's nice on the whole that people sort of watching each other's backs, and everyone collectively wants the category to thrive. You know, we've kind of touched on this before. Yeah, of course. Like, you know, when we talk about the likes of spiced rum, there are certain products that we like. There are some that we don't. It's not like we always 100% behind the practices, you know, that are used. However, if there's anything that sort of like opens the door into the category, gets the idea of rum kind of in their head, as long as there's then, you know, good people out there to sort of steer people in the right direction and provide the correct information and just guide people in a good way. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with it. And again, you know, something like Plantation is a prime example. They're firing out so many products. Just, you know, my own personal taste, some have really hit the mark, some have missed. But the fact that they're producing a lot of stuff and they're really experimenting is obviously an exciting thing from a bartender's perspective, from a rum fan's perspective. It's nice just for there to be new stuff out there to try and to think about. But as always, you know, there's two sides to the coin, and I totally understand why someone that is, you know, a third or fourth generation like distiller, something like that, really wants to preserve that quality and that unique that uniqueness.
That is our completely impartial and on the fence take on GIs.
Yeah. Throughout the course of this little chat, your hair's got more and more dishevelled. It's like,
wild.
Yeah, it's like the kind of topic is just like stressing you out a bit, you know.
Yeah, it is. It does stress me out, like legitimately. It stresses me out because I just want, like, you know, the more, I'm not one to say this ever, the more rules, the better. It hurts me inside that big time. Okay.
So Yeah. Well, I guess we said that we'd stay impartial in this, I guess, so we won't delve too much into personal opinion. But
yeah, but like, you know, I like it. Whatever's going to be is whatever's going to be, you know. I think it'll either work itself out and it'll be a compromise of some sort, I think, at this point. It really will be because, like I said before, like, you know, St. Nicholas Abbey, Mount Gay and Foursquare have 90% of the aged, like, kind of stuff sat in barrels on Barbados. But then West Indies Rum Distillery has... they make 90% of the production, I think, or like 80% of the production of rum. They make way more rum than all three combined, like the other three, like day to day. So I really don't know how it's going to go. So, but either way, at least we'll have a thing and it won't be this big. It's almost thing, like we spoke to some rum people about it and they kind of almost don't want to talk about it. They're very reluctant to kind of...
It's like an elephant in the room kind of deal, isn't it?
At the moment,
people
are
trying to be polite and courteous and everyone just kind of wants to push it forward in a positive way. But I guess there are some certain roadblocks that or hurdles you've got to kind of overcome in order to keep moving it forward. But I think from a... Certainly we would like to hope that there are some more just casual rum drinkers, rum fans that find these videos at one time or another. The best thing to do really is to try a lot of different products yourself and kind of come to your own conclusion taste wise because especially on at the initial stages when you know just trying this stuff, it's what tastes good, right? You know, so try stuff that you like the taste of. If there are, you try multiple different products from a particular country, you know, maybe start to delve into that a little bit more and then hopefully be able to unravel what it is about the production methodology that's making it taste a certain way that you enjoy. And then you'll start to gain more of a clearer picture as to what you're looking for on a label or what you're looking for from a brand as to what rum works for you.
Yeah, I think so. It's definitely your outro though, Jack Mitchell. So
am I doing the spiel? Yeah, we'll wrap it up there. Cool. All right. So as always, we presume you're watching this on YouTube. I think we're going to try and get it on like Spotify or something at some point so people could maybe listen to it on the go and not burn data, but we'll cross that bridge.
It's going to cost you an extra 50 quid a week at least. My appearance.
What?
Yeah. You have to start paying me for that. For Spotify.
Start paying you. Start paying you to not see you, just to be able to hear your bolstered tones. But in the meantime, yep, just run with it. All one word is our YouTube. Please give us a little like and subscribe so we know who out there is watching. And if you've
got
any questions...
It's there, by the way. No, it's not.
Okay.
Yeah, it's there.
I'm not even going to attempt it because, yeah, whatever. But wherever the big subscribe button is, click that. Any questions or comments? Oh, my God. Can you stop chiming in on my outro?
I'll shut up now. I'm done.
Yeah? Are you finished?
Yeah.
Good. Good. Little glimpse into behind the scenes of the kind of stuff I've got to deal with on a daily basis. Right, where was I? Oh, yeah, so questions, comments, anything like that, feel free. Just drop us a little comment or you can always DM us on Instagram, which is exactly the same name, just run with it, all one word. There we'll post up anytime we're going to release one of these videos, if we've got any new rum in we're interested about or just stuff in general. And I think that just about covers us on where to get in touch with us. Anything else you want to add, Andy, or have you chimed in enough for today? Yeah.
Terrible energy. I'll give you a 3 out of 5. Enthusiasm, maybe a 3 out of 5.
Do you know why? Do you know why my energy levels were lower? Because you kept chiming in, sapping the life out of me like a fun sponge.
I still love you, though.
Right, we'll wrap it up there.
All right, don't say it back.
See you next time.
I'm going to keep recording until you say it back.
I love you too, mate. Right, be good.
There you go. That's the end.